let's try that again. I will call practice the Grover Beach perfect. Planning Commission meeting to order. It is Tuesday, August 5th, 2025, and it is 6 p.m. This meeting may also be viewed on Channel 20 and is available live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. A reminder that what you will see on the screen if you're live streaming is about 45 seconds to a minute behind what's actually happening in the room. Members of the public may provide public comment during the meeting by calling 805-321-6639. The phone line is now open, and on the phone line it will be more in sync with what's happening in the room. So we'll start with a flag salute, and since I haven't done it in a while, I will lead us. Please rise.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. You may all be seated. Ms. Ratana, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Halverson?
Here.
Commissioner Hoffman?
Here.
Commissioner Holden?
Here.
Vice Chair Swift?
Here.
And Chair Mann?
Here. Great. At this time, the Planning Commission will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. And then the Commission will adopt by motion the agenda as presented or revised. Are there any revisions to the agenda? I'm not seeing anyone raise their hand. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I will move to approve the agenda.
A second?
I'll second.
And this is a voice vote. I have to work on my language today. So all in favor of approving the agenda, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion passes. Next, we'll move on to, I will reiterate that we do have the phone line open for public communication. And at this time, this is for items that are not on the agenda. So please call in at 805-321-6639 if you would like to provide public comment. Any member of the public may address the commission for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest that is not on the agenda that is within the jurisdiction of this commission. The commission will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the commission cannot act on items not on the agenda. So I will open this part of the public comment. Is there anyone who would like to address the commission on an item that is not on the agenda? I'm not seeing anyone move. Is there anyone on the phone line?
No, there's not.
Then I will close this part of the public comment. Moving on to the consent agenda. If there's any member of the public who wishes to address the commission on any item on the consent agenda, which is just the minutes from the last meeting, you may call in at 805-321-6639. So I will open a comment for that. Is there anyone wishes to speak to the consent agenda in the room? Seeing no one rise, is anyone on the phone? We'll close that. Moving on, I will need a motion to, which is a voice vote to approve the consent agenda. Do I have a motion?
I would move that, what are we doing?
The minutes.
The minutes. Approve the consent agenda. Of last meeting.
Do I have a second?
I second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. We now go on to our public hearing items, which is what I believe most of you are in the room for. Starting with development application DA-25-0014. The applicant is Nathan Simpson, and assistant planner Cassandra Mesa will give us a presentation.
Good evening. We will be reviewing an application to consider an indoor commercial recreation facility within an existing building located at 592 South 13th Street. The project site is located at the northwest corner of Trouville Avenue and 13th Street within the neighborhood commercial zone. The project site APN 060-295-025 is located at 592 South 13th Street. The project was developed in the 1940s with an existing approximately 1,500 square foot commercial building. The historical use of the site has been various commercial uses, with the last office occupying the building in 2022. The project site is bordered by single and multifamily residences to the north and west, a market and deli to the south, and commercial building to the east. The applicant is requesting approval of a use permit to establish and operate an indoor commercial recreation facility, specifically a karaoke lounge and arcade within the existing building. The facility would provide 3 karaoke lounges and 6 arcade rooms. The proposed hours of operation are Monday through Saturday from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Sunday from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. with the option to make reservations ahead of time or walk-ins. There will be no age restrictions as there's no alcohol to be served. Vending machines will be provided for snacks and beverages. Business staff will ensure that patrons of the arcade who are 12 years of age or younger and patrons of the karaoke lounges who are 18 years of age or younger are accompanied by a guardian. Karaoke rooms will be outfitted with acoustic panels on the walls and ceilings to damper and buffer noise. The project is required to conform with standards and limitations of the general plan, development code, and engineering standards. The project is consistent with the city's general plan by supporting the city's goal for economic development and efficient use of existing commercial space. The proposed indoor commercial recreation provides a compatible use within a neighborhood commercial zone, utilizing an otherwise vacant and underutilized commercial building, and contributes to job creation and community service without generating significant impacts to surrounding properties. The project site is located within the neighborhood commercial zone, which is intended for neighborhood serving uses adjacent to residential neighbors. The provisions of this zone are intended to ensure that development is smaller scale and compatible with adjacent residential areas. The project consists of the new karaoke lounge and arcade within the existing commercial building. This smaller scale building would serve the adjacent neighborhood with 3 rooms for karaoke and 6 arcade rooms. The proposed project is consistent with the intent and purpose of the NC zone. An indoor commercial recreation facility is an allowable use within the NC zone with a use permit. Use permits require specific findings regarding general plan consistency, neighborhood compatibility to ensure the development does not generate impacts related to public health, safety, and welfare, and ensure site suitability regarding design, traffic generation, and public services. The required findings to support the use permit application have been incorporated into the resolution. The project is consistent with all applicable general plan policies and development code requirements for the zone. The type and intensity of the use proposed will not contribute a hazard to the public interest, health, safety, or welfare. The proposed karaoke and arcade lounge is required to comply with the city's noise standards. For an indoor commercial recreation facility use, so 1 parking space per 500 square feet of floor area is required. The existing building on the project site is approximately 1,560 square feet, resulting in a requirement of 3 parking spaces. Currently, the site provides 8 undersized parking spaces that partially encroach into the public right-of-way. These spaces are considered legal non-conforming as they do not meet the current size and location standards. A remodel permit was issued in 1985, including a driveway approach along Trouville Avenue. However, the plans did not include the addition of the parking spaces, and the city has no record of when the striping occurred. As part of the development review process, existing non-conforming situations such as this are addressed to achieve compliance with current standards. Additionally, because the existing spaces are located within the public right-of-way, the project was referred to the Public Works Department for consideration. To address this, the project has been conditioned to restripe the parking area to provide 7 standard spaces measuring 9 feet by 18 feet and to record an encroachment agreement for the spaces that remain within the right-of-way. The proposed karaoke and arcade lounge is required to comply with the city's noise standards, as previously mentioned, and the project has been conditioned to comply with these standards and regulations. Staff has evaluated the project's consistency with relevant requirements and found it to be consistent with current standards. Therefore, tonight's recommendation is to find the project consistent with the general plan and development code and approve the use permit subject to findings and conditions. And that concludes staff's presentation. Please let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you very much. I will go through the, I'm calling on the commissioners to see if you have any questions for staff at this time. So I will start with Commissioner Halverson.
Hello. Okay, so I have two areas of questioning. I guess the first one is the parking space. Once again, we've chosen this generic category of entertainment, or I'm sorry, a commercial recreation facility. And that number is 500, one space per 500 square feet, which is pretty generous. If you look at the other categories, they're all lower than that. And just for fun, I went and looked at some of the other areas around. The city of SLO is 200 square feet, so five. The county, I was just trying to find it again. Anyway, it's less than five. So I'm curious, how do we get to five?
I can answer this. While I wasn't here when the parking regulations were adopted at the current status that they're in, we looked at this. Our recent application that your commission looked at and approved was for the indoor batting cages, right, which also applies the indoor commercial recreation at 1 to 500. That's consistent with the Association of Transportation Engineering Manual for Indoor Recreation Facilities. So my assumption, again, I was not present when the parking regulations were adopted, but my assumption is that it looked at the application of that type of use within kind of at a nationwide level and the data that's collected for the need of those types of spaces and applied that ratio. If it is something that your commission is concerned with for future parking needs of indoor recreation facilities, we have brought parking for accessory dwelling units to the attention of the council, who have discussed at their most recent council agenda meeting concerning the development code amendments and the ADU updates, that they would like staff to pursue some research and investigation into our city's parking regulations for future needs. But as of right now, that's kind of the best estimate that I can give you for why that's 1 to 500 compared to other communities.
Okay, so I guess I wonder if we should apply a sanity check to these things. I mean, that's a pretty generalized description. It could apply to everything or nothing, indoor recreation facility. I mean, if you look at this, it's going to have several rooms, and if even three of them are occupied, the karaoke rooms, you're going to have more than two cars in the parking lot. It doesn't make sense. I mean, maybe the number that we're going to end up with is going to be adequate, but to say that we only need two seems unrealistic at best. So anyway, that's my comment. I think we do need to look into that one. I think it's too generous, and I think the category itself needs to be better defined.
So for indoor commercial recreation facilities, just for the commission's benefit and reference, it includes establishments that provide amusement and services for a fee or admission charge, may also include related commercial facilities, including bars and restaurants. Examples include bowling alleys, card rooms, coin-operated amusement arcades, electronic game arcades, so video games, etc., pool and billiard rooms as primary use, and theaters. And as always, it also includes the ability for the director to have some level of interpretation of the most similar use to those described.
But most of the things in that definition are covered in their own category, and and where they are, they're much lower numbers. Hmm. So again, the definition of, I mean, the one you just read is too generalized, because like I say, we have maybe more than two, maybe two-thirds of those items are already covered in their own category. So it sounds like the intent based on that is it's a very general category under which things like bars and restaurants and everything, billiard halls, are listed underneath that general category. So maybe the general category doesn't even get a number. It's just a header for these other subgroups. Right now, all these groups are under commercial buildings, right?
Commercial recreation facilities,
well,
yeah,
no,
indoor.
I mean, over all that, this is...
relating to parking.
It's all, well, no, it's related to parking, but the requirements for each occupancy are divided up into residential and commercial. And so under the commercial, we have these recreational categories, including the restaurants and the bars and the places that people go and the public goes to recreate or to eat or what have you. So the commercial recreation to me is not defined, and the definition you read isn't adequate because it's covered other places. So again, I would recommend that we define it more carefully in the code.
Okay, so just to clarify, the kind of overarching recommendation and question is whether or not commercial recreation facilities, which is adopted as part of our definitions, to potentially break that out and have more specific categories based on what I just read, that second tier of them.
Sure, and like I said, most of them are already there. I mean, we already have community gardens, health and fitness facilities, studios for art, dance, martial arts. Those are all separate categories in our definitions.
Correct. I mean, I'll have to look into that a little bit more, but I hear what you're saying, and it sounds like you'd like staff to consider looking at kind of breaking apart the commercial recreation indoor facilities definition to kind of itemize those and
right.
look at what the needs are for the specific uses,
yes,
and not collectively looking at them and applying it universally
right,
for all those uses.
Because to me, it doesn't, these last two examples, the batting cage and this one, they don't meet the sanity test for what really goes on there and how many people could be attracted at one time,
mm-hmm.
and therefore what the parking demand would be. It doesn't make sense. What staff calculates is the minimum number doesn't really jive with what you can imagine the number should be. So based on that, the continued use of that as the baseline for us to make a decision doesn't make sense either.
Yeah, and so also looking at, though, if we apply what other cities have applied as it relates to the parking ratio, the maximum number of parking requirements that we would have to apply at 1 to 200 would be 8, and they're providing 7. So it would just be that additional parking space.
But I'd like to clean up the way we approach these things. And so, in this case, it worked. In the case of the batting cage, it worked. But there's going to be other cases that come along that aren't going to work.
And we can present that to council and ask for direction on how we make those amendments. But in this next 2026 calendar year, staff will be looking at different development code amendments. So, for example, to our subdivision regulations,
sure.
Hopefully to our parking regulations as well, should the council direct it as such. And we can add that as one of the things that we look at because we are seeing a lot more popularity and getting a lot of business inquiries for some pretty unique indoor recreation facilities. It's exciting to present those unique experiences to people of Grover as well as visitors. But I think you're right. I think if we are going to see these unique uses that aren't defined, let's put that sanity test to them and make sure that the standards are applicable to the use and not more of the umbrella category.
Exactly.
So I appreciate that.
Okay, so enough of that. Commissioner Swift brought up in some email correspondence with you the question about whether the building would require fire sprinklers,
mm-hmm.
Which I was thinking about also. He beat me to it. And I guess it doesn't because they're not modifying the building and because it is a limited number of occupants at one time. So it becomes a Category B building, which doesn't require sprinklers anyway. And I think in your final correspondence to him, you said something about adding a requirement that the occupancy be limited to 50 people.
Yes, so while not required, because it's already a standard building code requirement,
yeah.
And fire code requirement, that if the occupancy classification, so in this project, in this case, we're going from an occupancy type B to a type B. So there's no change in occupancy and therefore no change in the assumed hazardous risk of a fire. And so sprinklers per our code are not triggered. However, should that occupancy change, and the way that it would change would be from it to go to a from a type B to a type A, which is considered assembly, and that's over 50 patrons. And so what we could do is, for full disclosure and disclaimer to the applicant and for their reference, we can add, can you bring it up on the screen, please? We can add this condition of approval should your commission want to. You can just go backwards. Should your commission want to, and I've referenced this with our building official, they agree with the language, though they reiterated it is absolutely not necessary because our code would require it anyways, but we can add it if your commission would like to add this language. So for the life of the project, so as long as they have an active BTC and are operating in the city at this location, if they went over 50 patrons, they would be subject to that change in occupancy, therefore they would have to install fire sprinklers. Though that is not the plan at this point in time.
Okay.
But yeah, this was what we were going to present, should your commission have wanted to see it.
Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got.
All right. Commissioner Hoffman, did you have any questions for staff?
No, not for staff.
Commissioner Holden?
No.
Vice Chair Swift?
Yeah, I actually want to kind of pull the thread on both the things that Commissioner Halverson asked, in that if you look at the answer to the fire sprinkler limit, right, 49 persons, that basically tells you that they can have 50 people at the place or 49 people at the place. If those 50 people each came five to a car, that's 10 cars. So again, back to the inadequacy of the parking regulation, the sort of occupancy load drives what I would say is the parking requirements as well as the fire requirements. I mean, is it realistic to think that they're going to actually have 49 people in this building during normal operation? I mean, is that the planned operation of the building?
I think I would look to our city attorney to kind of answer the question as to whether or not we can require more parking than what our standards require now. And again, as I mentioned, the occupancy of the building is not changing, and unless it does, we don't have a mechanism to require fire sprinklers. There's no assumed risk. The applicant will be required to meet with our building official and or building inspector to kind of conduct a pre-inspection of the site itself. And they'll look at how are the, you know, arcade games going to be connected to electrical? What's the current electrical panel? What, you know, they're going to have to go through that process when they're, you know, putting the acoustic panels onto the ceilings and onto the walls. The building official and or inspector will be looking at how are they being attached to the wall? What's the flame resistance, or what's the flame I can't remember the term, but essentially how flammable are the materials, and is that going to potentially trigger the need to install fire sprinklers? So all of that kind of gets captured at that next stage in the process, and it isn't something that is typically considered as part of the development application.
Understood.
And it's, yeah, covered under fire code. And again, I would ask our city attorney whether or not there is a consideration to be made here without a preponderance of evidence that the parking is going to trigger more than what our parking regulations require.
No, I mean, generally when an applicant submits an application and it goes through the review process and is approved, it is subject to the codes in place at the time of the application. The only thing I'm not sure about, and maybe Megan can answer this, is whether or not there's any discretion within the code that gives the Planning Commission the authority to add additional parking.
Yeah, and I don't think I'm challenging this one specifically. I think it's done, right? Even the code is pretty generous. But if you're looking at recommendations to the council or future revisions to the parking code, I think you have a clear case here where you have an intensity of operation in an indoor facility that could have this many people, and that many people is going to drive all sorts of other support infrastructures that should be captured in the future mm-hmm. code changes, right? The parking requirement
Absolutely.
Should reflect this type of intensity. And back to your red underlined stuff here, I actually like that. That at least gives some limit for where fire safety changes.
Right, and again, it's already code, but I'm more than happy to include this as part of the conditions of approval, should your commission wish to apply it and add it as probably just to our building section of the conditions of approval.
And at the, you said at the building approval, plan approval stuff time, they'll look at ingress, egress, like you said, all the materials, things like that.
Correct, accessibility, ingress, egress, electrical, ventilation, et cetera.
Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then I had, question for staff. So some discussion about the parking. There are three quite large service lots around that area, including the community center. I wasn't sure what are the rules for, could people potentially park in the community center lot as overflow? And the other question I had was, is there anything that precludes the applicant from building some bike parking on what's now landscaped? Or it looks like there's a couple of other places that something might go in. Because it is a very bikeable location, and it also is on two bus lines. So there are ways to get there without getting in a car.
And nothing, as we, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
So as long as there's nothing precluding them, should they decide that having decent bike parking would be helpful. My recollection of that intersection is there's not really any place to securely lock your bicycle except for the community center. So I would encourage that. I know we can't require it, but nothing, I think it would make sense for this.
Yeah, nothing precludes it. It would have to be, installed and probably fixed into or bolted into the asphalt there. But nothing precludes them putting down some little bike,
like the U-shaped,
the bike racks. Yeah, the U-shaped racks.
Okay.
And depending on its location, it might need an encroachment permit, but if it's entirely on private property, it just would need to show how it's being affixed to the ground so that it doesn't blow away or float away. As it relates to shared parking, so we do offer opportunities for businesses and new developments to enter into shared parking agreements. So it's a private agreement between the two property owners and or two businesses, or collectively altogether, but it is required to, I believe, be along a walking path, so it can't cross a street, for example, as far as I can recollect, and it has to be within a certain walking distance to be able to qualify for that shared parking agreement. There could be some leniency if that was a part of an application for the Planning Commission to make that a little bit longer if it meant for the benefit of accommodating parking and they couldn't get it done on site. But again, this project is able to comply with the parking regulations and has provided additional in excess of the three required. Mm-hmm. So we don't recommend that at this time, but they could if they wanted to.
Okay, great. That was all the questions I had. So moving on. And we will open the public hearing for this item. First, to hear from the applicant, please.
Hello, I'm Sky Von Perling. I'm the one trying to open this karaoke lounge and arcade. I'm doing it because I think that arcades and karaoke lounges are a valuable part of the community, and I want to provide a public venue space that people of all ages can hang out at. So I don't know what specific direction I should talk about regarding the karaoke lounge and arcade, so let me know what questions there are.
Do any of the commissioners have questions for the applicant?
No. I do. I was wondering, is there going to be a lobby? It doesn't really seem from the schematic.
I don't think I have 100% fixation on what each particular, if we could go back to the slide with all the rooms. really what I have planned is I'd like to have one room be a kind of a lobby or entrance, the first room from that entrance way. It has, you know, a couch and a piano, and that's kind of a lobby. And I also would like to have kind of a coffee table room and another room further back in the middle top. So yes, there will be a lobby room or two, something of that sort. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the applicant? I don't have any. So we will move on to, you may sit down, and we'll move on to see if there's anyone else in the room who wanted to speak on this issue. I will repeat that if anyone is watching online, you can call in at 805-321-6639. Is there anyone in the room who wanted to speak to item two? I'm not seeing anyone else rise. Is there anyone on the phone?
No, there's not.
Then I will close public comment. Okay, commissioners, now we get to talk amongst ourselves. Do we have any, did you have any questions for the rest of the commissioners? Commissioner Halverson?
I don't have any other questions. I basically would support the approval of the project.
Okay. Commissioner Hoffman?
I think this seems like a fun addition to Grover.
Commissioner Holden?
Yeah, I'm in favor of the project as well.
Vice Chair Swift?
I will go here before I go to the batting cages.
I think it's going to be a great addition. I know. I had a karaoke birthday party. I had to hire a karaoke person, and I think it's going to be great fun. It's hard to find places, kind of third spaces for youth, where they're welcome and that's alcohol free. There's plenty of people who need something like that, and I think it's going to be great fun. So I'm excited about the project. Anything else? Then I will request a motion to approve development application DA-25-0015.
Okay. I move that we approve application DA-25-00. It's 1-4 on the...
Oh, sorry, 1-4.
On the agenda. With the additional language that Community Development Director Martin suggested to properly bracket the fire safety limit.
Do I have a second?
I second.
All right. Clerk Cortana, would you please call the roll?
Do we need to know the placement of the condition?
We would add it to the building section of the conditions of approval. It would be the last one. So BD or BLD. I can't remember the acronym.
So BD-5.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Vice Chair Swift?
Yes.
Commissioner Halverson?
Yes.
Commissioner Hoffman?
Yes.
Commissioner Holden?
Yes.
And Chair Mann?
Yes. Motion passes unanimously. Let's move on to item three. Coming up, we have development application CHG-25-0002, and we will hear from Community Development Director Megan Martin.
I don't know what I'd do without you. Thank you. Thank you. Megan Martin, Community Development Director. So tonight we are presenting a request for a change to a previously approved residential development project that's located at 1220 Long Branch Avenue. The approved project includes construction of 10 townhomes across two buildings, a three-story structure that's building one, a two-story structure that's building two. And the proposed change is limited to, the proposed change before you this evening is limited to a request for a waiver of the private open space requirements for five of the units, and that is building two, which I'll bring up a map in just a moment. There are no changes to the building design, the number of units, or the site layout beyond what is necessary to accommodate the removal of that private open space requirement. So the project site is located at the intersection. It is the southeast corner of the intersection of Long Branch Avenue and South 12th Street. It's within a high-density residential, or R3, zone. The surrounding context includes a mix of uses, including Grover Beach Elementary School just to the west, and some additional small service and commercial-oriented businesses to the south and to the north, and single-family residential homes to the east. This location supports infill development consistent with the general plan's policies and goals for higher-density residential uses near existing services and transit. As your commission may recall, the approved project consists of the construction of two new residential buildings, a three-story structure along South 12th Street. So that is located here. If you can see my cursor, you can't. It's the lower units on the screen above you, containing five townhome units and one accessory dwelling unit. A two-story structure along the eastern property line contains five townhome units and five accessory dwelling units to be installed within the lower level of the five units within the bonus room. Vehicle access is provided from Long Branch Avenue, with all parking accommodated in private garages for the townhome units. The project did qualify for a 5% density bonus under state density bonus law, requiring the dedication of one of the units, 5% of the base density, to very low-income households. So this qualifies the project for both one concession under state density bonus law and the ability to request waivers of development standards. And there's no cap to the number of waivers that can be requested as part of density bonus projects. This is all outlined in Government Code Section 65915. So the proposed change, again, is limited to the removal of the private open space on that eastern property line to accommodate five additional accessory dwelling units within Building 2 and the bonus spaces that you see just below the green space where the red lines are marked out. In order to accommodate a pedestrian easement required for emergency access along the eastern property line, so that the ADUs have direct access from the pathway along Long Branch. Under the original approval, each of these units were designed with a rear yard to meet the private open space requirement of 140 square feet per unit, but the applicant is now requesting a waiver from this standard, reducing the required private open space to zero for those five units. This request is made pursuant to state density bonus law, which allows eligible housing projects to apply for an unlimited number of waivers of development standards if those standards would physically preclude the construction of a project at the permitted density. So unlike concessions or incentives, which are limited in number, as I mentioned, there's no limit to the number of waivers an eligible project may request. As part of the original project approval, the applicant qualified for benefits under state density bonus law by providing the single unit for very low-income household. This made the project eligible for the concession and the multiple waivers. The following were approved at the last Planning Commission meeting, approval of the project, including a concession to increase the maximum building height to 37 feet, where 32 is allowed, a waiver to reduce the minimum street side yard setback to 3 feet instead of the required five. And as I mentioned, the applicant's now requesting an additional waiver to reduce the private open space requirement from 140 square feet per unit to zero for those five units. These waivers are intended to remove physical barriers to building at the density permitted by state density bonus. State law requires that those waivers be granted by the review authority or your commission unless they would result in specific adverse impacts to the health, safety, or environment. Staffs reviewed the request and found no such impacts, and the project continues to meet all applicable development and design standards. The project remains consistent with our general plan. The requested waiver does not affect land use or density and supports emergency access, aligning with broader planning and public safety goals. In addition, the project remains consistent with all applicable design standard, objective design standards in accordance with the state density bonus law. The project remains categorically exempt from the provisions of CEQA, or California Environmental Quality Act. The required findings for that exemption have been provided in the draft resolution. Lastly, tonight's recommendation is to find the project consistent with the general plan and development code and density bonus law and approve the design changes as proposed, subject to findings and conditions. And with that, staff recommends your commission adopt the resolution approving the development application CHG or change 25-0002 and the design changes to development application 24-24, previously approved projects, subject to the findings and conditions in your report. That concludes my presentation, and I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. It is now time to ask questions of staff. I will again start with Commissioner Halverson.
Yes, ma'am. So the very low income unit, I assume it's still part of the project.
Yes.
Is that correct? And so the new proposed ADU that would be part of that unit, would it also be a very low income unit?
So I forgot to mention that we are joined this evening by the project applicant, and they will be able to speak to that question.
Okay. And then is there a proposed layout for the new ADUs that are using this bonus room space?
Not at this time, but I believe, has the building permit been submitted for already?
Yeah, we're on our second.
Second round of reviews?
We
have it, but apologies, I didn't review the layout prior to coming to the commission, but the ADUs are currently under building permit review.
Okay, and the access to those is going to be?
Through that previously rear yard space that is now going to be a single pathway.
Okay.
Can go back to the, no, it'll now be a single pathway along the green. That'll be a pathway that access will be taken from that pathway into each of the individual units.
Okay, so probably those two trees will probably go away.
Yes, correct.
Okay, I guess that was the questions I had. Thank you.
Commissioner Hoffman?
No questions.
Commissioner Holden?
No questions.
Vice Chair Swift?
Just a sort of clarification on the pictures. So it's those blank spaces near the back of the garages or what are being converted to ADUs, not the garages themselves?
Correct. The garages will continue to serve the approved 10 approved townhomes.
Okay. So it ends up being now 10 approved townhomes, 5 ADUs, so 15 dwelling units total on the lot.
10 townhomes, 5 additional accessory dwelling units, and the original approval included one ADU within, I believe, the very low income unit. Is that correct? I'll have the applicant speak to that. But I believe that so it's 6 ADUs, but this is 5 new ADUs that trigger the need for the waiver from the private open space requirement.
And the ADUs are attached to the deeds on the existing townhomes, so they're deeded with the townhome.
Correct.
Okay. So it's,
yeah.
So
they
it's
cannot
five,
be sold separately.
5 townhomes with 5 ADUs as part of them. One of the townhomes set aside as a affordable unit, and we're going to hear whether the ADU that's part of that is also an affordable unit.
Would be rented as an affordable unit,
yeah,
correct.
Would be rented as an affordable unit.
Which I believe that it would, but I'll have Mr. Bischoff clarify.
And the driver was to give rear access into that space as private access.
Correct. Access to the units is required, and so instead of coming through the existing front entrance, which is just on the western side of the garages to the approved townhomes, the ADUs would have completely separate access and entrance along the easternmost property line boundary.
Okay. And in terms of, again, parking, even prior to the code that's going through the approval process right now, ADUs were not required to have any parking accommodations.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I, just to clarify, I thought in the original develop application, there were 2 ADUs, one in building 1 and one in building 2.
I will have the applicant clarify
okay.
that.
So we're getting an additional 4, essentially.
An additional 5 ADUs. Yeah, it's an
Four.
Because unit D, it looks like, already had an ADU on the ground floor. So we're getting an additional
right.
4 in the 4 units that are to the north of that for a total of 6. Okay. That was my question there. And then, yeah, I'm curious to, I'm assuming if it's a full ADU, it's going to have a toilet and a shower and a kitchen, and it
yes.
will have, it'll be like an efficiency apartment, essentially.
Correct. Yeah. They're required to meet all the requirements of government code as it relates to and the standards of developing an ADU.
So would those be considered accessible depending on how they're designed?
They're required to be accessible under building code standards.
So we get another 4 accessible ground floor units.
Correct.
And we, I mean, the community that we live in is more than half the people are unmarried. We have a lot of older folks that need to downsize. So I find that very an attractive choice. So, but that's all I have for that. So let's hear from the applicant. We'd love to hear from you. I will open public comment.
Good evening, Paul Bischoff. I am here to answer your questions. And yeah, subtle difference, but the original one, the back unit in each of the buildings in the original application had an ADU. So there technically was 10 main units with 2 ADUs, and then we're adding 4. So your assessment was correct. And yeah, the access was, you know, it wasn't practical to have those private and fenced off on that side because the access now, and even before, like emergency access would have been, mm-hmm. even if we had a different way to enter the units. So having an ability and a fire to get out, it's common. I had it in another project too, that the, you know, we weren't allowed to, either we were gonna have some sort of gate that with a panic bar, if it wanted to be private, and you couldn't lock them, and you know, that's kind of convoluted, and are people really gonna do that? And so having it just wide open, it appears to be the right way to accomplish that. And so that's what we're asking for tonight.
Great. Do any of the commissioners have questions of the applicant?
So Chair Mann said that they would be accessible units. Is that really the case? I'm imagining that walkway along the back will require a sill where the door goes into the ADU.
Right. I was not.
And there's not room for a ramp or anything. It's a very small width.
Right. Yeah, I was not aware that they would have to be accessible.
Well, I don't think they do.
Yeah.
That was just the question she asked of whether they were.
They're definitely one story and easily navigated. And then there is a possibility to have entrance from the driveway side. So all of that would be nice and flat, but still would have a sill, a little bit of a ramp. You know, it's not a commercial kind of where you could take a wheelchair all the way through.
Okay. And the question of how the very low-income unit is managed as far as the ADU goes?
Yeah. Kyle Bell, the planner that's working on this, who isn't here tonight, told me that it wasn't required. If it turns out that it is required, then I'll, of course, comply.
Sure.
But then, you know, I'd love to maximize the profit on the project as well.
We've never seen that situation before where
totally.
You have a unit that now has an ADU. It's a designated unit that now has an ADU.
Right.
I don't know what, I'm sure it's covered in the law somewhere, but.
Right. We had the discussion about it, if it was going to be for sale, and oh shoot, well then the new owner would have income from the ADU, and so then that would probably put them over the income limit, and so it wasn't very practical at all to make it a for sale unit. I was planning on keeping them as rentals anyway, so it worked out fine, but that was an interesting nuance that, oh, you know, a low income person, that pushes them over the limit, and then they can't own this home, you know, this property, so the for sure the affordable one, it's more practical to be a rental.
Yes, certainly. Okay, so you're going to work that out with the staff, and however it comes out, I'll be curious to hear how it does come out, actually.
Right. He told me by email that it wasn't required that the ADU was under the affordable, and the main unit would be. But if it turns out that he wasn't correct in that, and both of them have to be, then I'll comply with it, no problem.
Okay. You were going to say something? No.
Commissioner Hoffman,
no, I just agree with his assessment. So he's correct. It, to my understanding, it is not going to be required.
So who manages that unit? That in the other units, it's going to be up to the person who buys that condo unit. That's part of the ADU is part of what they're buying, right? So this person who is going to rent now, the low income unit, isn't going to have ownership of that ADU. Who is?
Yeah. It'll be me in this
okay.
case.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Mr. Bischoff.
And as far as income qualifications, we have a program. One of our staff members is responsible for collecting the income certifications each year for all of our affordable housing units in Grover Beach.
Okay.
And then there's a way that they go ahead of time, purchase or rent, to get qualified. I don't know if the city still uses Haslow, but there was a project that I did that had affordable units for sale in the past, and it was nice. We just sent them to Haslow, and they did all the income verification. It was essentially like applying for a mortgage, because they said, oh, yeah, you have this application that you're talking about your life, and so just give us a copy of that, and it was pretty seamless for the people that did it. But the rentals would be in the same category because the income requirements are the same.
Okay, very good, thank you.
And just a really quick clarification, I sometimes use accessibility interchangeably with ADA, but I just meant that accessible path of travel will be required to each of the units, which is what is being offered, but the entrances themselves to the ADUs don't need to meet ADA standards.
Right.
So just to clarify, sorry for the confusion.
That is funny that the acronym ADU and ADA are so close that just mixing them in your mind's easy.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Not
Commissioner
for me.
Halverson. Commissioner Hoffman?
No.
Commissioner Holden?
No.
Vice Chair Swift?
Just a question on the size. What's the size of the accessory space that's being converted to an ADU?
I think it's 350 square feet.
350 square feet. Okay, so pretty good size.
Yeah, not bad. And yeah, it has a bathroom, pretty small kitchen, as you would imagine, for that space, a little closet for laundry. So yeah, the floor plan's pretty good for 350 square feet. And, you know, two people could navigate there pretty, you know, couldn't have much more than two, but two people could live there.
And in terms of the units that are losing their sort of ground floor backyard open space, do they have what I would say is sufficient open space above the ground floor so that they don't feel like they have no outdoors at all on their places?
Yeah, well, they don't have, I don't remember, I don't think there's decks on these units. My thought in my mind is that Grover Beach Elementary and the park and all that is right across the street. So if there was a need to go for kids to play and that kind of thing, that's a pretty good spot and you know, just a few feet away.
All right. Thank you.
Great. I am encouraged by this change. I go and look at rents pretty frequently. It's hard to find a studio apartment for under $2,000 a month. So having a few more on the market would be really good. and 350, I think the place that I rented up on Newport 7 years ago was less than that, but I did not have in-unit washer dryer.
Mm.
So that would be a very nice feature. So we got another four units. The one thing that I try to bring up is without having that outdoor space, pet relief or pet waste removal, I don't know if there's so someone exiting their rear unit, their ADU, is probably going to take a left and head towards the street. That would be like the first place that a pet would probably try to go. And I wonder if there's maybe a way, if the side, it looks like it's 6 feet between the back of the unit and the lot line. Is that going to be the width of a path, of a concrete path, or might there be a little landscaping or, you know?
Yeah, in the narrow area,
it'd be hard to do.
Yeah, it'd be hard to do. So the spot that's essentially the farthest to the left in the in the front of the property, and I guess you could turn right and then right again.
Like
that's pretty narrow in the back, though, with the trash enclosure. I don't think there's going to be much room to get by. So you would go towards Long Branch.
Yeah.
And that's landscaped from the front of the building to the back of the sidewalk is all landscaped.
So just being aware that that's probably the most likely place that your dog is going to go when it leaves your unit.
Yeah. Sure.
And to be kind to neighbors on that front.
Yeah.
Is there anything else I wanted to talk about?
I'll make sure I put signs that tell the dog, wait. Okay, now go.
Yeah, and I don't know, is there going to be like an exterior faucet for cleaning or hosing things down on that side of the building?
Yeah, typically there's a hose bib on the front of the building, but yeah, I could totally add that. That would be easy.
It's going to add cost, obviously, but...
Yeah. pretty minimal.
For the purpose of, should an animal pee, and then you want to just rinse it off into the
yeah,
side, that
it's
might
not
be
a bad idea.
Helpful.
And it's not, doesn't, not as necessary on the other building, mm-hmm. but that building with the narrow, and yeah, if somebody has a small dog and wants to make it out, it's a good idea.
Just a thought.
Yeah.
And if it works in the plan, awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't have any other questions for the applicant.
Okay.
We can continue the, unless you had more questions for us.
No, yeah, I'm great, thank you.
All right, I see no one else in the room to speak on this item, but I do want to open it up for anyone on the line, if there's anyone there.
No one is on the line.
Okay, then I will close public comment on item 3. And commissioners, do we have anything to discuss amongst ourselves for this?
Not for me.
Commissioner Halverson, Hoffman?
No.
Commissioner Holden? Vice Chair Swift? I don't either. I will invite a motion to approve the change CHG-25-0002 to development application 24-24.
All right.
I
move that we adopt the resolution approving development application CHG-25-0002. And the design changes to development application 24-24, subject to findings and conditions of approval.
I will second that motion.
We have a first and a second. Clerk Ratana, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Halverson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Swift?
Yes.
Commissioner Hoffman?
Yes.
Commissioner Holden?
Yes.
And Chair Mann?
Yes. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to item 4, which is development application TE-25-0003. The applicant is Eldorado Holdings, LLC, and we will hear from Development Director Megan Martin.
Yeah, thank you. Megan Martin, Community Development Director. This evening, a presentation for your commission to consider a time extension. It's the third and final for El Dorado. It's a cannabis company. The use permit was previously approved for the processing and distribution facility located at 921931 Huston. So the previous time extensions were granted to the applicant based on their contracts with general contractors and the need to find just general construction materials. They are still looking at securing some of those contracts, but we're hoping to move forward here soon. And so their deadline came up for their second one-year time extension. They're requesting their third. There are no changes to the project. There are no changes to the design. There are no changes to the operations. It just simply was a timing issue. And so they are requesting their third and final time extension. Staff received their request in a timely manner on the date that it was due. And we recommend that your commission adopt the resolution approving that time extension, TE-25-0003, for their third and final 1 year time extension. That would put them at, I believe, July 6th of 2026. And with that, it concludes staff's presentation. And if you have any questions, I am available.
Thank you very much. We'll start with Commissioner Halverson. Any questions for staff on this issue?
No questions.
Commissioner Hoffman?
No.
Commissioner Holden?
No.
Vice Chair Swift?
No.
And I do not have any questions. I see no one in the room remaining to speak on the issue, but I will open public comment anyway, just in case we've got someone on the line.
No.
And I will close public comment. So, moving on to, do we have questions among ourselves for this issue? Commissioner Halverson?
No.
Commissioner Hoffman? Commissioner Holden? Vice Chair Swift?
No.
I don't have any questions either. I will invite a motion to approve development application TE-25-0003.
I will move to approve development application TE-25-0003.
I'll second.
I have a first and a second. Clerk Ratana, would you please call the roll?
Commissioner Hoffman?
Yes.
Commissioner Holden?
Yes.
Commissioner Halverson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Swift?
Yes.
And Chair Mann?
Yes. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. That closes out the public hearing part We have no regular business items on the agenda at this time. So moving on to commissioners' comments. I'll go through this one more round. Commissioner Halverson,
So I actually have something to share tonight. My wife and I both got invited by SLOCOG, which is the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. They're going to have at the end of the month a regional transportation, let me see if I can find the words here, a facilitator-run in-person focus group meeting with a focus on transportation needs, shortfalls, and funding options in our local cities and unincorporated communities. So I don't know if anybody else got invited to this. I don't know if Ms. Martin is going to sit in the back and watch or what. My wife declined, but I'm going to go. I just want to let everybody know. I'll let you know what it comes out of it. I thought it was interesting, since we're doing our circulation plan update now, that I can put our 2 cents in, I guess. That's it.
Cool. That sounds great. Commissioner Hoffman, did you have anything?
No.
Commissioner Holden?
No.
Vice Chair Swift?
I think before we started this evening, I was talking about biking, and it plays into your SLOCOG meeting. I actually know some people that have gotten invited to it, and so I shared some of the circulation element information from the Cal Poly students with them, said these are the kind of things you want to take with you and talk about. But I did find it was interesting that at these various forums, they're always pushing for more bike access and bike trails, and yet what we see is the kids aren't riding bikes. And so how do you reconcile that, from a transportation and planning perspective? So maybe SLOCOG will have something there for you. And then the other one I had really is a question back to Community Development Director Martin. Back on item two, you had basically said, well, this is something that we'll have to get taken later to the City Council as a legislative body to act on or provide direction. And I guess, one of the things I'm kind of curious about, and maybe that's a conversation for the broader commission, is when we see things like that where there are, recommendations for a deeper dive on discrepancies in the code, or recommendations to look at performance of revisions that have been made or decisions that have been made, how do we close the loop on that? If we make a recommendation out of here to go look at, how do we make sure that loop gets closed with you or with your direction to staff from the council, so that we don't drop those things as we find them, but also so that we can provide recommendations to you or back to the council to consider doing a deep dive on various sections where we have either seen questions come up, or where it's time to do a deeper dive and a review of things that we've seen running for a while, and is it performing the way we expected? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And it's a careful balance. The Planning Commission's role is really to look at projects and have that overall review authority or land use authority on the impacts of that project on the community and the benefits it provides, its consistency with the general plan, et cetera. You are absolutely able to provide recommendations on items that you see are lacking, are ambiguous, are lack clarity. Well, that's ambiguous, but you can provide those recommendations to staff. What the Planning Commission cannot always do is direct staff's workload. And so a deep dive into, for example, overall parking regulations, or a deep dive into, not that it's not possible, but a deep dive into completely redefining land uses within our code that were modified in 2022. I don't have the ability to say, okay, I'm going to jump on that and I'm going to get it back to you within this amount of time. But I do and can tell you that as part of our work program and part of the commitment I made when I joined the City of Grover Beach's team is to annually and or as often as I can look at where those those improvements can be made, and then present that to the council as part of our work program and the development code amendments that we hope to take every single year, our lessons learned. And so myself, as well as my team, keep a running list of things that we want to see fixed, and your commission's comments on those items as well, and or additional items we don't see, we add to that list, present them to the council. They then give us direction to make those changes. So a really great example is the indoor recreation facility. We haven't seen anything like that in the 2.5 years that I've been here. We have these two applications that your commission's just approved. We just received an application this afternoon for what is known as a rage room, and it is considered an indoor recreational facility. And so,
responsible
like
for that.
Yelling rage, or just like anger?
Baseball bats.
It's how you choose to spend your time in each of the different rooms that they offer. But think office space and a printer. And you kind of just get to, you can look up this type of activity. It's very popular in the Bay Area as well as LA, but they're interested in bringing that business here. So here we have a unique situation where we're being presented with these very, very creative and unique business ideas that people are interested in, but we don't have a very great way of looking at our code and saying, well, I guess we kind of have to make some interpretations of how we apply this because it doesn't quite fit, but it is the most similar use. And when we get enough of those, and when your commission says, hey, staff, can you look at this a little bit more practically and really get a closer look at it, we present that to the council. The council directs us, yeah, let's look at making those modifications. And this is now that third application that we've received. And so it's a question of, okay, as part of that 2026 audit that myself and my team do, what improvements do we need to make? And this is one of them. Parking regulations is one of them. Asking the council for direction on parking regulations as it relates to accessory dwelling units. Our subdivision regulations are outdated. I'd like to see those updated. Outside of the SB 684, which is the new subdivision laws that have come down from the state. But anyways, I hope that answers your question. It's very much a team effort. And the things that you notice and the things that you bring up as recurring themes of questions and concerns, we make note of that and we add it to our list of things that we want to see improved then. It makes your job easier. It makes us being up here and answering your questions easier. But Planning Commission doesn't have the authority to direct staff's workload. And that's where that boundary comes into play.
So is there, and this is maybe a question for the legal team, but is there a way to agendize a topic that's not brought to us for approval, but agendize as a planning commission to maybe firm up some of those thoughts over the last year or 2 years or whatever, and put them down as part of the public record and a public discussion about them, so that it's an output from the planning commission that then goes through you into the city council for, you know, here are some things that have come to our attention that, you know, as a commission, it would be worth capturing those in a single public document.
Yeah, and I can think of two different ways that you could accomplish that. And one would be that you as a commission decide as a group that you'll send a representative to the city council meeting to, at public comment, say, on behalf of the planning commission, we'd like you to consider X, Y, and Z. And that would put that on their radar without involving staff or impacting their workload. I don't believe that this commission has bylaws, but my second suggestion would be that when those bylaws are adopted, that it includes some language that kind of addresses the issue that you're asking about, which is how do we kind of affect change when we see an issue. And I do think that's within your purview and that you are an advisory body to the city council. And I would assume that they've appointed you to bring these things to their attention because they don't always see these fine details in the different projects. So, and that those bylaws, when adopted, will be approved by the city council. So by virtue of doing that, they're kind of approving that method of you bringing that information back to them. So those are the two things that I can think of off the top of my head. And then also I'll let Director Martin talk about how she could facilitate bringing those items to council if she has a mechanism for doing that.
So I'll get to that in a second, but one thing that we absolutely can do is that if you're commissioned during commissioner comments, and then there's, you know, there's a voice vote or however it would need to happen, if there's something that you'd like to agendize to bring back and discuss further, you absolutely can do that. So for example, one of the things that Chair Mann asked for, and I think there was a collective agreement, was to really understand whether or not our objective design standards are limiting architectural diversity and design along West Grand Avenue and in the community in general. Unfortunately, our workload keeps kind of pushing that back, but it is still on our radar and something we're hoping to bring to your commission in the fall. So that hasn't fallen off the radar. It just because of all of these other projects that we've had that need to be agendized, it's getting pushed. So you can absolutely, if there's a topic that you'd like to discuss more and understand, we can bring that at a future commission date and have it as a business item and have it for formal discussion with, our attorneys indicated, with formal action of, okay, well, how would we like to maybe present this to the council? And then you can vote on that. And then if it's to have staff present it, that's a conversation that I can also take back to the city manager and ask how he might want us to pursue that as staff. Definitely possible.
So would it, I mean, would it, this is really my question now for the other commissioners, is that would it be worthwhile to have you know, once or twice a year, an open agenda item, you know, which makes it a public discussion about, you know, items that need a position out of the commission that are urgent enough to actually put out a, hey, as a commission, we recommend that these get elevated in that priority queue for consideration and why. I mean, is that, I mean, for example, the objective design standards and the lack of color on West Grand Avenue, you know, is that, are those things that we want to have a formal position out of here and take the time to agendize something to do that?
I don't know. I guess I would feel comfortable if staff had a robust, organized system to capture comments, suggestions that we come up with and address them in a regular fashion. A lot of these things affect different codes and plans and things, and they come up for modification, for updating on a regular basis. That's correct, right? There's no dead ones sitting out there that haven't been updated for 20 years, right?
No.
So on a regular basis, they do come up for update.
Yeah.
And if you had and it sounds like you do, have a organized way of tracking not only our things, but I assume staff comes up with things on a daily basis when you run into something on a project.
Not daily now. We're doing a really great job.
Okay. Well, anyway, I would feel comfortable if that was in place. The only thing that's missing from that is the feedback that you're looking for. I'm not sure how to accomplish that, except I assume when you have this list that the origin of the idea or the thought or suggestion is captured as well?
Yes, when we finally are ready to present the changes, the origin of the idea is presented.
So if David wanted to check with you and say, how's that idea I had about this, mm-hmm. you could look on your list and say, oh yeah, we've got that. This plan's coming up for update in 2026, and that's going to be one of the items we look at.
Yes, absolutely.
And on the other hand, when you bring us something for approval, a plan update, you could bring that list with you and say, here's the genesis of these items that we're going to be updating. And there's the one that Chair Mann brought up a year ago. That would be reassuring to us that we're not just talking to ourselves.
No, absolutely. And that list does exist, and we have it. That's why single stairwell reform, I brought that up the last time that we were chatting. So yes, we have all of those ideas. I would just, also make the suggestion to the commission is, as you're thinking through ideas, our city council changes their priorities and their goals. Sure. And so the recommendations that you have in terms of asking the council to consider shifting staff's workload should align with those priorities and with those council goals. And if they do not, understanding that we'll continue to maintain that list, and when we are able to and we have the resources to tackle it, that we will do so. you know, again, 2026 is going to be a really exciting and yet busy year for us. We're going to be kicking off our housing element update. We have a conservation and open space update that we have to do to meet some state law changes regarding climate change and climate resiliency. We've got our building code cycle update through the end of this year. We've got our circulation element coming out at the end of the year, and we're still pursuing pro-housing designation. The HCD changed the rules on us. So again, the workload is vast, but what you see when we have these monthly meetings is a priority and is important to us as well. We all want our jobs to be easier. So any recommendations you have, you make them, and we keep track of them for you.
So maybe just have that, not that I'm going to direct staff, but maybe having that as part of your report, because you're going to give us a report here in a couple of minutes, that part of your report maybe quarterly or twice a year includes the
sure,
the generalized list of things that are on the to-do list.
Since everything or commission ideas and recommendations?
The commission stuff, right?
Okay, yeah. I'm happy to do that. It could also be a report out towards the end of the year as to what staff's priorities are going to be going into 2026 as it relates to the development code amendments, and then having the asterisk next to the ones that are commission directed.
Cool. I like it.
Okay.
Any other thoughts from the rest of the commissioners? I did have a question as to whether we have an inventory of parcels that are commercial zoned that, for example, if they are not conforming to the parking requirements at this time for that size of a space, or it depends on the use, I guess.
I don't, there isn't a record that exists at the city, but it's one that you know, if we hired a student or an intern to do, uh-huh, they could probably do a quick GIS project to figure it out. But we identify those legal non-conforming, or in some instances, just non-conforming situations when we receive an application, uh-huh, or we get a complaint.
Yeah, I just was wondering if there was a way to get out in front of it, you know, by sort of...
Not usually, yeah, because legal non-conforming uses, I hate to use the term grandfathered or even vested, but they essentially, there's no mechanism to require them to comply until they change the use or they change the structure in which that non-conformity exists. So there's no real way to get ahead of it. But when we receive applications and we are taking a look at the whole of the site and the project, that's when we catch, mm-hmm, we catch it and we bring them into conformance.
And then just thinking to getting more people biking, I suppose that's something I could take over to the Parks and Rec group to see if there's some sort of, you know, classes or other community service, or not community, what's the group, the director over there, Larry?
The community services.
Services group, that they, maybe there's something that, I know we've done a couple of group rides with the cops, but... you know, some other sort of way of encouraging the kids to, if the parents aren't comfortable teaching them how to ride a bike, maybe a good neighbor can. So.
Someone who doesn't care about their health.
You must have a lot of patience.
The kids in my complex have got their e-bikes all over the place, so yeah. I think they would be delighted to have a place to lock it near something cool like the karaoke.
Speaking of
place.
Ideas for city code updates, there's I've been reading about several cities in Southern California that are enacting code to rein in the minor driving a bike that can go 40 miles an hour without a helmet, without a license, without, you know, safety equipment of any kind. They're having a lot of issues, bigger cities, obviously, with more kids and more bikes and more traffic to hit. But, you know, we're on the cusp of those same kind of problems. So I don't know. We can follow suit probably at some point. It's a big issue, and Mr. Swift is right. It's becoming a bigger issue with our circulation plan, because there's no reason to build bike lanes if everybody's going to be driving in the street with their 40 mile an hour e-bike. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, our city police, our former city police chief and former city attorney updated the traffic and vehicle regulations, I think in 23 or 24, but I don't know that it included anything relating to e-bikes. or eat anything, honestly. So I can bring it to the attention of our chief of police now and see if he has any thoughts. And it'd be an update to our municipal code rather than to the development code. But I think it's a good one.
Okay.
I have an opinion on the topic, but it's also not on the agenda. So I can share that another time. All right. So we're good with commissioner comments?
Yeah.
I'm ready to hear from the community development director with her report.
Hello. Megan Martin, community development director. I have a few updates for you this evening. One, I wanted to make your commission aware, if you've communicated with anybody recently who's had any code compliance issues, that our code compliance officer has fallen ill and is out on medical leave. And I am the acting code compliance officer. Funnily enough, our senior planner's on his honeymoon, which we're very excited for him. He got married last Saturday, so I am also acting senior planner, as well as my roles and responsibilities as community development director. But my point is that if you have spoken to anybody recently regarding any code compliance case and they feel as though it is not being addressed quickly or that they're not being heard, please let them know that my dedicated days are Wednesdays and Fridays, and that I've committed to, and for the last 2 weeks, can thankfully say I give everybody a call back within 24 hours. And at the most, 72 hours if it's not an immediate or urgent public health, life, safety risk or issue. So they'll be out probably for an additional 10 weeks, maybe 12. So I just ask for your patience. Please advise folks if they have any code compliance issues to email or call our code compliance at groverbeach.org. So again, code compliance at groverbeach.org. Or they can call the dedicated code compliance line, and that is 805-440-1336. And that's the best way for me to track the calls and make sure I'm taking them in the order in which they're received and everybody gets a call back. So just a heads up for everybody on that. I also wanted to give you some development updates. 950 El Camino Real, not sure if I updated you last time. They're still slated for occupancy in November of 2025. So hopefully they stay on that timeline. We're very excited for that to open. Cleaver and Clark remains on its trajectory of occupancy in December/January. So probably first people, they'll likely be issued occupancy, but the first folks will move in January. Applications to be considered and or placed on the wait list for the Cleaver and Clark Commons project is available on People's Self-Help Housing's website. 401 West Grand Avenue, they're targeting early 2026 for occupancy. 197 West Grand Avenue, those permits are just about ready for issuance, so we should start seeing vertical construction very soon. And that's for the mixed-use building. 550 Farrell, that's the Astound project. Their permit's ready for issuance for the second building. So we're excited to see that go up and for those inspections to start. Lastly, Peak Wi-Fi, which you probably remember just from a couple meetings ago, they've resubmitted and their building permit's currently under review. But I don't have a date and time yet of when they'll start construction. Lastly, not development related, but circulation element related, our transportation engineer, LLG Consultants, they're going to be coming out and setting up cameras as well as pneumatic tubes along roadway segments and key intersections. Kind of said that backwards. So cameras at key intersections, the pneumatic tubes along roadway segments for traffic counts the week of September 8th. So we'll be putting something out on social media as well as in the Grover Gazette to kind of let people know if you see something weird in the street, don't touch it. And we'll look forward to hosting very shortly after that, probably in October, depending on how quickly we can get the data analyzed, hosting a joint Planning Commission City Council meeting to discuss the data and discuss policy moving forward as we continue on the update process. Lastly, more fun and exciting news are the music festivals and the summer events that are going to be taking place throughout the rest of the summer. So we have two summer concert series left, August 10th and August 17th. I'll be there this weekend at the city's booth along with Michelle, one of our Grover Beach Police Department employees. Very excited. Come by and say hi. I think we got some new colors of t-shirts and sweaters. So definitely come by and check those out. The colors look really great. It's like a new teal and a bright pink. Mayor D really likes the pink color. August 23rd and 24th will be the 2-day Stone Soup Festival. We're excited for that. September 20th, the city is going to be hosting alongside some of the West Grand Avenue businesses, the West Grand Avenue Block Party. And this is to kind of celebrate and beyond the red ribbon cutting that occurred about a month or so ago, is to celebrate the opening and the success of the West Grand Avenue construction and streetscape design, as well as to just kind of put out to the business community, you know, this is really for them to say, you know, thank you for the patience and to celebrate them and host them. It'll be in West Grand Avenue. I believe there will be at least, I think it's 10 to 15 vendors they've booked already, and live music, and it should be a really great time. So that's September 20th. We look forward to it. And I think that's it, unless anybody has any questions of me regarding construction going on or development going on in the community.
Are there any questions for Development Director Martin? My only thought is with that September 20th event, is that kind of, they're going to block off Grand Avenue there?
They will, yes.
And I assume someone has alerted the residents.
Yes.
Between 6th and 7th.
Our team coordinated with Mr. Kim, the Community Services Supervisor. So we provided him with a mailing list, and he's going to be reaching out to folks within a 2-block radius to alert them to the event, as well as the closure and the map.
Yeah, I have a coworker who lives in that block, and he's been through it. I'm trying to think of it.
I understand.
Okay. I think we're at the end. Is there anything else we need to tackle? We are at the end of the agenda. I will adjourn the meeting at 7:25.